Hello and welcome to Fair Trade, Project Zion podcast series where courageous people share the candid stories of their faith journey and what brought them to Community of Christ. I'm your host, Blake Smith, and we are here today at Happy Valley Campgrounds under the shade of giant redwoods. This is an incredibly beautiful setting, and I am here with a new friend of mine, Emily Allen Nielsen. So welcome, Emily.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you with us here at Project Zion Podcast. Before we get into the story of your faith journey, how about you tell us just a little bit about yourself so our listeners get to know you better?
Yeah, I am currently the guest minister here at Happy Valley this week, but I live and work in Portland, Oregon. I'm a teacher by trade. I've taught 3rd through 11th grade. I'm a former Peace Corps volunteer and an elder here in Community of Christ. I have two wonderful children, Soren and Finley, 6 and 3 year olds, and I get to spend a lot of my family time with my extended family, the Nielsens.
So not only have you gotten the opportunity to live in one of the most beautiful parts of the country, I think, you have traveled all over the world as well.
Yeah, I've done a decent amount of traveling from the Midwest, from a really tiny town, going out of state even to go to spec as a high schooler was a big deal. Lamoni seemed huge when I decided to go to Graceland. There was a more than just stop signs. And now I live in a city and I have lived in Nicaragua. I have done some traveling to South America and Europe and would love to get to do some more. Yeah. I've been to the Pacific Islands with World Service Corps. I'm starting to think Australia.
And where was the Peace Corps?
Peace Corps was in Nicaragua.
Oh, okay. So do you speak other languages other than English?
Before Peace Corps, no. But to live and work in Latin America for 3 years was a trial by fire. And yeah, learn Spanish. Me defiendo.
Wonderful. I wish that I'd had that opportunity. I am trying to learn Spanish now, and it's a lot harder when you're not immersed in it.
Absolutely. So,
and when you're older to learn something new. So, if I remember correctly from our previous conversation, you were not raised in Community of Christ.
I was not.
So how was growing up in the tradition you were in? Where was God in that? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I grew up in Southern Illinois and I grew up in a divided family.
Okay.
My parents divorced when I was 6. And I remember from the youngest of ages of having this sense that there are many different viewpoints. Specifically, one of my families, the family that I lived with most of the time, was very conservative. And my mom remarried and then moved into the Southern Baptist faith community. And I was very immersed in that that circle, that aspect of life growing up. However, I would also visit my dad every other weekend and on the summers. And my dad is a very, very strong atheist, like not a believer, and in so many ways thinks the world would be better without religion in general.
Wow.
So he was very afraid that, one, I was in a cult and that I was not being taught to think critically, to look at how to improve the world, and that I was being kind of closed in to this narrow-minded view. He is a very, very bright blue dot in a very red area. So I would go back and forth between these two very different belief systems, whether you're talking politically or religiously, economically, all the different things. Their parenting styles were night and day as well. And it was very confusing for a long time and jarring. Like we would have no one visit sometimes when the first night that we would like go back and forth, my sister and I, is when I, what I mean when I say we, because it took so long to like transition to the new space and the new rules and the different ways of being. So I remember really, really wanting to be a good Christian. Like that is a part of who I was. Like I was the kid that like didn't want to get in trouble. I wanted to do all the things correctly. And so I, in my little kid brain, took it upon myself to have a binder and read and take notes on every verse and chapter in the entire Bible.
Wow. No pressure there.
No, and looking back on it is hilarious to see, my thoughts and reflections at that point in life when I was a middle schooler, high schooler, kind of trying to dive into this project. But even at the time, I was so uncomfortable. I found myself unable to reconcile what I felt and believed about God, about the Spirit, about who we are called to be as humans and as this force of good in the world, with, well, specifically the Old Testament stories.
Right.
It was There's some really awful things in there. And when you read through every single verse and chapter and like are trying to like parse through it, and I mean, I was a middle schooler and high schooler without any guidance on it necessary, other than a Southern Baptist literal reading. It was terrifying and I hated it. And so I found myself not knowing what to do with those uncomfortable questions and beliefs. When I would bring those questions up with my faith leaders at the time, I would get, just pray on it, or I trust that it's there for a reason. And I don't even remember what version of the Bible I was using. So like I can't even tell
Right.
you at this point, like on the semantic questions there. But fast forward a bit, I was invited to a Community of Christ senior high camp by the Morris family from Southern Illinois.
Very good friends with the Morris family.
So Emily was a couple years older than me.
Okay.
Their youngest, Will, was in my class, and Marilyn was my fourth grade teacher. I mean, a small town. Like we're talking, there were 20 people in my graduating class when we started kindergarten through 12th grade. So a very small town. And we ended up going to a senior high camp, and it completely opened my worldview of, oh, like there are people in the Christian faith that believe slightly differently, that maybe don't take as much of a literalist view. And I didn't even have the words for it at the time, but there was a kinder, softer, less fire and brimstone, you're going to hell version of faith. And I was very intrigued.
That's got to be kind of freeing a little bit, at least, to have come up in that environment of strict literalism. And then even just having maybe a slight crack of light and freedom coming through that. So you say you're from Southern Illinois, and quite honestly, it doesn't happen to be one of our more progressive areas of the church.
True.
I mean, Illinois in general, Southern Illinois, and a lot of areas around that are predominantly traditional. I know that the Morris family would be one that be open in Maryland, being so loving that I can just sense that that would be a great place to be kind of introduced to a new way, because she would have such a gentle and loving way of sharing that. I want to pick up on something real quick before we go. You mentioned your dad thinking that you were in a cult. And the reason that catches my attention is, I'm sure you know now, I mean, the RLDS Church, which became the Community of Christ, has long been considered, as part of the Restoration tradition, a cult. But you're talking about your dad thinking, just being in Christianity in general, what's called, is that right? Or am I?
Both.
Okay.
So, the particular the particular Baptist church that I was going to at the time, he was very concerned with that, very concerned with the conversations that he would I would have and like theological debate around my beliefs at the time. But then also when I started going to senior high camps, when I decided that I wanted to go to Graceland, he, probably Googled, or did we
And
Google at the time? I don't remember.
let's see.
Maybe, I don't think we did back
Maybe
then. My
we
father,
weren't using encyclopedias anymore. That
no, we weren't. Internet was a thing. My father probably looked up Community of Christ, and I know he freaked out.
then he was really
Then
convinced.
he was really convinced and really concerned.
Yeah.
And in fact, when I joined the church, my sophomore year, I believe, at Graceland, sophomore, junior, sophomore year, let's go with that.
Okay.
I remember writing this multi-page letter to my father, trying to like convince him that like I still am this person that cares about people, that cares about questioning things, and that trying to convince him that the Community of Christ is not a
It's
cult.
not a
And I remember having both Bill and Marilyn read it, having like Tony and Charmaine read, like all of these different voices to help inform it. And it did not go over well. And there was a big rift between him and I for a while. And in fact, it's one of the only times that my divorced parents agreed, even though they weren't speaking to each other. My Southern Baptist family also thought I was maybe going a bit too far off the deep end, but in a completely different
It's
direction.
so nice of you to provide something to bring them together.
Right?
Glad we could do that for you.
They've come around now, so things are a bit different there. But as I mean, as loving and as a part of the community as Bill and Marilyn were, I didn't know until way later in life, understanding some of the challenges that exist in navigating that aspect of being a Community of Christ member,
Right.
when a lot of the other small town religious folk think so differently of you.
Yes, I grew up in northwestern Florida, which is basically southern Alabama and the Bible Belt. And one of my best friend's father was the lead pastor of a large Baptist church right down the street from our church. And we were good friends, but we couldn't talk church because I was in a cult.
Yeah, just so
It
fascinating
would, yeah. Yeah.
that those division lines are so stark, even amongst faith communities. And I think having to learn to navigate at such a young age, the extreme differences between my two households helped me be able to learn how to walk those lines in different communities, whether we're talking my travel later on in life or these faith communities. But it's a lesson I think we all need to dive a bit deeper into, especially nowadays with things being so divided further and angrily divided. Not
Yes.
just differences in opinions and beliefs, but I just feel like it's gotten we've all moved further apart, and I feel we all feel angrier about how far apart we are.
Right. We had been at a place where we disagreed, but we could talk and, have reasonable conversation, and we've been losing that connection. Yeah.
I fear that we're losing it.
Yeah. Well, I think unfortunately, that fear is very well grounded,
I'm not the
and
only one who
you're
fears
not the only one who feels that or fears
that
that. So let's talk a little bit about your journey into becoming part of Community of Christ. I hear you talking maybe, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, God has always been an important part of your life, but
moving
maybe a little bit more from a fear perspective of getting everything right. And then you mentioned just sensing a little bit of maybe there's another side. So tell us about how
Yeah.
that happened and what it felt like. And
I mean, as a young kid, very much it was fear-based. Whether we're talking my Southern Baptist pieces or even some other family members, like I remember at the earliest of ages being told things like, if you even think a bad thought, if you don't immediately ask for forgiveness, you're going to hell. If you like got in a car crash 10 minutes later,
right.
like living with that sense of deep-rooted fear and that God existed to judge us is almost what it felt like. And maybe that wasn't the only message that was around, but that was the message that I took in and
Right.
really felt deep within me, really afraid of making the wrong moves.
I
Do you?
remember we I lived across a park, across the street from a park growing up. And my bus stop was on the far side of the park. And there were days I remember where there were members of, and I'm not making any particular judgment, they were from the Baptist Church who would stand in the park and catch us when we got off the bus and say, "Do you know where you're going when you die? What will happen to you if you get hit by a bus as you cross the street to your home?" I mean, I sense just that fear. I can't even imagine growing up in that environment on a daily basis.
Do you know the concept of a hell house?
I have not heard
Oh
that
my goodness.
terminology, but it sounds scary.
Oh, so picture Halloween,
Okay.
but Christian run. And so you take over a house and you build a story where you like take people through and they're like following the life of someone who makes either poor decisions or bad decisions. And then they end up in hell. Like it's almost like watching a play, but you're moving through a haunted house and then you end up seeing that person after their tour or after their poor decisions be tortured. And then at the end are
Oh my God.
priesthood members waiting to have you give your life to Christ so that you will not become like that person. Like we're talking, like,
Wow.
I'm really lucky. I feel so lucky
Yeah.
to be where I am today, knowing not only that like fear-based belief that was so rooted in that community, but we're not even talking the most cultish of this circle of baptism, whether it, I don't even want to go down that road, but I was only a little bit removed from some of the more publicly known cults and pieces. So my particular congregation wasn't didn't get pulled into some of the bigger scandals and
That's
things,
good.
but I was only a slightly removed. But yeah, I hope you never
Well,
have to
thank you.
experience Hell
I
House.
don't feel so bad about the park
It's
encounters anymore now.
not a competition though. It just to go from such fear that was probably the most influential part of what experiencing senior high camp at Brush Creek was for me. It was a community in which I felt I could be myself, and I felt that there was just this message of God's love being like the core tenet. And this idea, I also remember being so intrigued by this idea of continued revelation. And I know that can be for people who don't know Community of Christ or don't know the RLDS background or like that can be the line
Right.
that takes us too far, right? That
Absolutely.
we're trying to rewrite the Bible and we're trying to do all these things and the story of Joseph Smith and that can be what turns people off. But for me, it was this idea of, oh wait, we're still listening and we have more to do. And I even remember as a high schooler and looking through my notes and things like the Old Testament God was that wrathful God. But the New Testament message was a bit more of hope. There's still some scary stuff in there too. But
Right.
a bit more hope.
We can hold on to the "you have heard it said, but I tell you"
Yes,
of.
exactly. And that distinction was what drew me in. And then by the time I
went to spec. I applied for the Wally B scholarship
Okay.
as a camper, at the encouragement of Bill in Maryland. I did not know at the time that non-church members didn't win. That was, and I don't know if that was a rule, but it was just kind of a tradition, maybe you could say.
Right.
And found out later that they had like people follow me through the week to see if I like was who I was showing up to be in the interviews and who I, like, because I was not a church member. There was this like
Right.
additional piece, but I ended up being the first non-Community of Christ person that I'm aware of that was awarded the Wally B scholarship.
Fantastic.
And now I think that that has
Right.
shifted
I
and
think that that's not an issue, but I would thought I like the outcome of that story because I was a little nervous about we haven't always done the right thing, so
But that's part of our story,
Right.
right? That
Absolutely.
whether we're talking these stories from biblical perspectives to now, we make the best decisions we can with the information and belief systems that we have. And a core tenet of my belief is that we are continually, every generation, getting a bit better and a bit better. And so it's not a judgment piece. That's apparently how it was. And I'm thankful that we're moving forward.
And we're at a point where we can do that. I mean, when we got the history principles in the church to say, you know, we don't need to deny that we've made some decisions, we've believed some things based on what we knew at that time, but here's how we have progressed. And that is helpful.
Yeah, I find that healing and healthy.
Healthy is I think that's a word that I would use to describe that because first of all, living in denial and undercover when you know the truth, and that's not authentic. That's not.
Well, and there's this expectation if the Bible is literal and everything was known, then that means things were perfect. Then what in the world are we even here to do?
Right.
So to me, it's always a matter of it's okay to make mistakes. I feel like I'm talking to my child, right? It's okay to make
Well, thank you. I
mistakes.
appreciate
It's
that.
okay to learn from our mistakes.
Where have you been all my life, Emily? I needed no one. My parents were very loving.
Oh man, but that we're being called somewhere else, somewhere forward, and that moment is now. That was another piece I remember feeling very differently. We've talked a lot about the hell aspect of
Right.
my upbringing and in that faith tradition, but there was this idea that anything you did right now was only to get you to heaven, and nothing about the stewardship of the moment, whether
Right.
we're talking people or earth or any present dayness, it only mattered to get you into heaven and to keep you out of hell. And that didn't sit well with me as a young adult, child, any of that space either. And so the community of Christ that I got to know, then the exploration I got to do at Graceland to, take classes with Tony and Charmaine and actually look at scripture in a very different lens to broaden that aspect, to really understand and dive into like the Doctrine and Covenants and where we're going, but that can be about right now. That doesn't have to be about some heaven in the theoretical
Light
future.
years away,
Right,
right?
right. That we are called to be a people of change now.
Yes, there's so much need for that, and so working for the future, well, it gives it kind of. We've been in this week together talking about hope, and hoping for something so far beyond. And well, one of the things I think the reason it was so popular is because it gives us a rationale not to worry about, like you said, about the earth and those things, because these are just passing moments, you know, and these things won't matter, but they do matter.
They do matter.
They
They
do.
matter a lot.
Yeah.
I almost think that they matter more.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. Yeah. And we didn't always live like that as a church. I mean, we were the Church of the Latter Days. And so we were preparing for the end times. And it helps me understand some of the things that we believed in the past. But I'm really glad that we're, as a tradition, not. Now, when I say as a tradition, we're not there because I think there are still folks, even within Community of Christ, who still, because that was the way they were raised and that's what they know, that they still believe that. So.
Well, and I don't remember if this was a conversation with you earlier this week or with other folks here at Reunion, but another thing I did appreciate and still appreciate about Community of Christ is the non-creedal aspect of who we are. And in other traditions, including Southern Baptist, where I came from, like there is a creed. It is very clear. You must believe this or you do not belong. And there is something I think really profound and beautiful and hard about having a faith community that allows any belief, any person with any belief into it, and not having that creedal anchoring. Because you can end up with very vastly different beliefs and values that end up hurting and conflicting each other in amongst the faith community.
It's a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing because there is room at our table for everybody. And it's a curse because you want to draw a line and say, you can't, how can you believe that and be a part of this? But it's also freeing to know that we can all live together in this. So Emily, you mentioned earlier, first of all, you're serving as guest minister here at this reunion in Happy Valley this week, and that you're also an elder. But tell us a little bit about your roles and your place and your participation in Community of Christ at this point.
Excellent question. And I think one that hopefully all ministers are kind of constantly asking themselves, but also one that for me has shifted a lot in the last few years, specifically the online aspect of the early COVID years shifted things a lot for me. My husband Andrew and I came back from serving the Peace Corps. We served for 3 years. Just shy of 3 years in Nicaragua. And prior to that, we were very involved in our local congregation. We were part of the co-pastor team. We were trying to move away from having a single pastor in the lay ministry world where we burn people out very, very quickly. We'd been Sunday school teachers and then
We've got a live body. What can we have them do?
right. So we tried like the six-person pastorate team and like just trying different ways to keep things alive. But then my husband and I joined the Peace Corps and we moved to Latin America. And so we weren't obviously a part of that. And we have some congregations in Nicaragua, but they were not close to where we were either. So we took kind of this pause from a direct Community of Christ connection to more broadly just living into our values and into our beliefs in what we were doing through Peace Corps. And then came back and found this really interesting difficulty in re-engaging. And not because any beliefs had changed and not because any of the people had changed, but that we were just at a different place in life. We'd gone from young adults living as dinks, dual income, no kids, which was part of what allowed us to do Peace Corps, to coming back to Portland wanting to start a family and re-engage in the work world. Going through some reverse culture shock, and then with a little at home, just not as able to participate in the more typical Sunday morning, here's what we go and do. And we tried it for a good while. I even took Finley, my oldest, to spec that first year.
Really?
She was 9 months old. I hadn't been to spec in a few years, and I went with a 9 month old, and that was an experience. But as any ministers, but I think especially Community of Christ ministers with young children might know,
It's a hard time to engage in the way that we church. And it felt in some ways isolating in that I was really trying to, Andrea and I were really trying to take care of our new nuclear family unit and figure out who we were in the broader community and start new jobs and come back to a time where we just weren't the same people. So then fast forward a bit because then COVID hits, right? And now I'm teaching online and there are some like mission center things online that we can kind of plug into, but it's just different. And we have our second child. And by the time things are like starting back up, it just doesn't feel like the right thing for us to connect into. And part of that was situational. My husband was working a schedule where we didn't have 2 weekend days together. So one family day to do the laundry, to do the house care, to have any family time, and then to give half of that to Sunday morning church just didn't work for us. And then for a while, Andrew was working on Sundays. So it would mean me taking the kids, which meant that I didn't actually get to participate. And then why are we going if it's
If I'm
just,
going to do childcare, why do I go to church to do childcare?
Or if I went and I got to participate, it was because my in-laws were taking their grandkids and then they weren't getting to
Didn't,
church.
right.
So it just is this strange interplay. And it leaves me with questions of, how could we envision that differently? In what ways? In some ways, I think the early pandemic years were an opportunity to reevaluate and restart and re-envision what community and church gatherings could look like. And I think we did some really great things with it. And I think we jumped right back to trying to do the same thing pretty quickly. So I don't know. I think I have more questions there than anything else.
Well, darn it, I was going to ask you, so what answers did you come up with in that, Emily? As a young family that has your world has changed, your worldview has changed, now your circumstances, your life has changed, and you personally are changed. You come back into that circumstance, that environment, and things are going and it's not working for you. Is there any insight that you would have that you might say, gosh, I wish the church had done this, or I wish there had been this?
I mean, I think I don't know if I wish anyone would have done anything differently because we were at such a strange place globally
Right.
with things online. And even still being asked to be the guest minister this week, and I have a 6 and a 3 year old. I haven't been to many camps where the guest minister is around my age or has young children with them. I think what's been pretty typical is a lot of our young adults in the young children age will kind of take a few years of a step back, and that's okay. And it's also kind of lonely. And so I've been really appreciative this week specifically of the conversations I had with the reunion planning team, that they were really intentional in wanting someone of my age, of my generation, with young kids
With young, yeah,
to come and do this and to support us in it and for people to see that. I was leading part of campfire last night, and Finley, my eldest, really wanted my snuggles, and she was like falling asleep in my lap. And I'm still trying to, I like take her up on stage and I'm sitting with her in my lap and stroking her hair. She's sleeping in my lap and I'm leading campfire.
and it was okay.
And it was
It
okay.
was not just okay. Actually, it was really this neat experience as a person who was sitting at the campfire to see the comfort level that was created there and just this openness of the community, where I can remember times where somebody would have just had an absolute fit that that was taking place. So to be present and see you be able to live into that with your family, not apart from your family, was really good for me.
Yeah, thanks. And I think that that's the beauty of camps, really. I mean, that has always th this space has always been a safe space for me. And as we talked about, it's
really what introduced me to Community of Christ, what brought me to Community of Christ, and in a lot of ways saved my life. So I think we're doing that part right still. Like that there's something that feels good there. My questions are just, how can that be more okay on a Sunday morning? Or is it not Sunday morning? I know that there are congregations that are trying different ways of meeting and being, and my mind goes to our time in Nicaragua, where we didn't know anyone, right? We are placed in a city that is brand new to us. It's just Andrew and I. And we were trained with Peace Corps volunteers. We like got to know our little cohort, and then they like disperse you all throughout the country. And yet, I felt more community. And I bet Andrew would say the same. The year or two we lived in Esteli, with the block that we lived on, like the people we, the community that we lived with. When I would go off to do a project in the capital, I did a lot of Peace Corps trainings. I ran camps. I directed a lot of camps. I brought that experience there, which was lovely. But so I would like disappear for a week or two, and I'd come back, and people would be worried about me. They'd like come bring me food. Like, where were you? We missed you. How have you been? People who were strangers became our neighbors and friends. And then we moved back to the US with all these people that we already know and love. And yet, if we didn't make the effort to go Sunday morning, just didn't have, like our culture is so car dependent, number one, where we live, and we just live farther apart. And unless there's a reason like reunion to bring us together, it's very easy to slip into independent living instead of interdependent living. And Peace Corps was an in your face, like I could not get away from our neighbors. It was hard sometimes to be like, no, I really don't need the food. Like I
Almost too much community.
almost too much community, or I had to learn to live with it, or the members who are listening, maybe from other countries and other nations, might know that the US has more of a like we're on time kind of aspect. And in Nicaragua, we were constantly late because people want to chat. And if you've got to walk 7 blocks, 7 blocks isn't a long walk, but you have to factor in, well, I'm going to stop and talk to the Dhoni on this corner, and I'm going to stop and talk to our avocado guy on this corner. And if you don't factor in those chats, then you end up really late, and that just became part of what we did. And I don't know how to emulate that here other than finding ways to bring the feeling of here at camps back to our lives. And I think if I think of my role, like if I think of myself as an elder, if I think of myself as a minister, what I have really focused on the last few years has been my family and the cycle breaking and the healing work to be able to parent the way that I want to parent, to infuse my ministry into my work life, which is in the public school system. So there's no proselytizing that happens, but there's a lot of restoration and healing that can happen.
The presence, your presence in the way you approach relationships and care of others.
And I've done a few weddings. I've been able to do some pastoral care work, but not out of a co-pastor situation that we had going on before. And I do worry about our model of lay ministry and how quickly we burn people out when we're trying to continually do the same thing that I say the same thing we've always done. The same thing we've always done as far as I've been around, which is not quite as long as us, maybe some other members, but I think continually reevaluating if what we're doing is one, working, and two, what our people need, and being willing to make shifts there. And that's going to be different for every little community.
Well, maybe that's a great segue. Maybe the answer is similar to the question that I want to ask you next, and that is, What do you see as the struggles for the church going forward as we try to reach new generations, reach new people, engage spiritual refugees who ha just have not been able to find a welcoming faith community, not based in fear?
I mean, I know we've done so much work, not only recently, but in the last few decades around our identity. And we talked a little earlier about like the non-creedal aspect of community of Christ, but our work with the enduring principles and our work on less saying, oh, we're not Mormon. Like that almost when I was joining, like that was the predominant way that people would like describe community of Christ. We're like a branch off of the Mormon church, but we're more open, or however people would say it. And I think more recently I've appreciated the work we've done around who we are instead of who we are not. And the enduring principles were a big part of that for me. I think of some conferences and resolutions in the past decade that have meant a lot to me and meant a lot in what I feel is moving forward as a faith community. And that doesn't come without cost or without conflict. There's been a lot of members who have been around for maybe longer that have felt really hurt by those moves and some of those moves. And I think if we're going to continue, one, to exist, and two, to make a difference in this world, we have to continually ask that question of what is it we are being called to do today? And if that's not in alignment with what we have been doing, then we have to be brave enough to change. And that is scary.
Haven't we had enough change?
But that's the nature of the world. That's, I mean, I mentioned like cycle breaking as something that is very central to who I am. Like my biggest fears in life are that I am not breaking the cycles of trauma from myself to my children. Like it is the like core tenet of my life. And yet, and I hope one day my kids are able to, when they're adults, come to me and say things like, Mom, I wish you would have done this differently. Because they know better. And I really hope that every generation continues that work. Not that I hope that I'm doing things wrong, but I know that I am. Because we all make the best decisions we can with the information we have, with the culture and context in which we're raised, with the beliefs that we grew up with. And I think it takes conversations like these to have the time and space to evaluate them, to give ourselves permission to ask those questions, and then to sit with it and see if we do need to maybe inch a little bit more in one direction or another.
So here we are. We're a denomination who has just finished an historic world conference where our president and prophet is a woman. I was just with someone who was showing me some things that he had created, and what it was a kind of an advertisement, and said, "Yes, our prophet wears heels."
Yes. Oh, I got to see that one.
I don't know if that's offensive. I don't mean it to be offensive, but it was just in his way, it was a celebration. And so we have so much to celebrate. I wonder, and I know you've touched on it some, what are your hopes for Community of Christ in this new moment?
I hope that we can revel and feel that movement, that success, that celebration, and also not get so caught up with the pat on our backs that we are hesitant to see the work we still have to do. I mean, I am beyond thrilled to have someone of my same gender in a very public, very high level role. Like that is I didn't come from a community, a faith community, where women could be any more than maybe the choir director. And I have felt so loved, so comfortable, so safe in this community. And I know that that's partial because I am female and white and speak English, and I grew up in the Midwest. And those identity markers have meant that this has been a safe place for me. So how can we continue to expand that? How can we help ourselves wrestle with, we're going to say this is a place for all, then how do we make it a place for all? And not just offer the invitation, but take action in the broader world to make that. Whether that's conversations about specific congregations or mission centers or the work we're doing beyond Sunday mornings, I don't know, but I feel so much hope in this moment, and I want to continue riding that momentum. I hope we continue riding that momentum.
That's great. I want to just pick up on a couple of things that you said because they resonate with me, and I think we so need to hear these things. So, with you saying, how do we celebrate this moment and yet not pat ourselves on the back as if we've reached the goal? This is a stepping stone, and it's a tremendous stepping stone, but we can't pause. So the momentum that you talk about, that's exciting. The other piece that resonates with me, and I hear you saying, well, you're recognizing the privilege of being a white Midwestern woman. Well, and I was resistant in the beginning. I'm like, I wasn't a part of all of that oppression, but I have come to understand, and I so deeply appreciate because of my relationships with others that I am the poster child of privilege, white, American, male, cisgender, heterosexual male. And wow. And I know that there are probably some of our listeners who just cringe at that word. So the more of us that can claim it and show that it didn't kill us, but that we are creating community. So I thank you for lifting those things up. Those are exciting hopes, I think, for all of us to carry. So what would you want the community of Christ to hear you say? I mean, as one who has transitioned, has had a faith journey that brought you to this place, what is it that you would want to hear, what want the church to hear you say, whether that's the leaders or a congregation or
I mean, if I think back and try to put it in a word or two, what brought me to this faith community was this idea of radical love and rooting our faith, rooting our beliefs in love for all, and in a hope for a better world and a hope for a better life. And I think that that would still be the message I would want us to centralize on. That I think we're at a point in our political environment in the US. We're at a point at a global level of divide that has not been seen in way beyond my lifetime. And the discomfort and the hate, the fear that is so palpable in all different sectors, regardless of where individuals land on their political spectrums and their own belief systems. I feel that we are so divided, and a message of radical self-love, radical communal care is in some ways even more applicable in this moment, historically and globally, than it was for, 16-year-old Emily, who had just visited a hell house.
Oh my gosh, I still have that image in my head from earlier in our conversation.
So I think there are those messages of hope around the world, those moments of brightness, of joy, of celebration,
like our historic movement and our new president. There are so many things to celebrate.
Is there anything that I haven't asked that you'd like to say or share?
I think just a thank you to the ones who have held space for me, and to ask those questions, those who have reached out, those who have been a part of my faith journey, my life journey. And I think the other piece would be to any listeners out there who are maybe feeling like they don't have a space anymore, to not be afraid to see if they still fit. I think there was a point where, even though I wasn't gone from, quote unquote, gone from Kingdom Union of Christ very long, it was just like it was this child rearing time of diaper changes and sleepless nights, and I still sometimes feel this like, oh, do I, is it okay if I come back? And it is.
It is.
I stepped onto this campground and just a campground that's not mine with people I don't know, and immediately fell back into community. And that's what we do well.
Well, I can't say thank you enough for taking the time to sit down and chat with me for this Project Zion podcast episode, but also thank you for this week. My hope for the church comes from watching folks like you, and just you have such a welcoming presence and smile. And I don't know. So the first meal here, and you don't know me, and I don't know you, and you opened your arms and we hugged, and I was like, ah, I'm home too, because I'm also a visitor here in Happy Valley. I guess I would be remiss too if I didn't give a shout out, whether or not she'll be listening or not, but to Marilyn Morris
Absolutely.
and to Bill, who's no longer with us, but to the Morris family and all of those who are part of your welcoming and finding space in this community, because we are blessed that you are here. And we've been blessed this week here at Happy Valley to experience your ministry and be blessed by your presence. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And thank you to all of our listeners here at Project Zion Podcast. As always, we appreciate you taking time out of your day to spend with us. And we hope that you will come back and join us again for future episodes at Project Zion. You can find us on all of your favorite podcast platforms or at projectzionpodcast.org. I will give you a little teaser that we're going to be changing our name soon, and we will be Faith Unfiltered. So keep your eyes open and watch for that. But we'll make it an easy switch for you in September of this year. Thank you so much and have a blessed day.